is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for Helen Caping, address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
Lindsay Caping first met Helen Taylor on the evening of his discharge from the Army in May 1946 at a small party which was given by a friend to celebrate the occasion. They saw each other regularly after that, and some 6 weeks later, on the terrace of her parents' home in Malden, he asked her to become his wife.
I haven't much to offer you in the way of worldly goods, but, well, at a pinch, I think we might just scrape by.
I'm sure we will, darling. With flying colors.
Does that mean you're willing to give it a try?
If you are.
Helen, I... You absolutely sure?
Absolutely.
You must be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
To marry an out-of-work actor. Why, it's the most ridiculous thing a girl could do.
It's too late to talk me out of it, darling. For better or for worse, I've made up my mind.
The scene changes. 7 years have gone by, and we pick up our story in the living room of the Caping home, late in the June of 1953.
Lindsay?
Mm-hmm. What is it?
There'll be a cab calling to me any minute. I thought I'd better say goodbye.
Goodbye? Where do you want to?
I haven't made up my mind yet. One thing's certain, though. I won't be coming back.
Won't be? What in blazes are you talking about?
I'm leaving you, Lindsay. For good.
You...
That'll be my cab now. I wonder if you'd be kind enough to carry my bags to the door.
Marriage and separation. The beginning and the end. Such was the unhappy prelude to a case which over 2 years later was to find a place in our files, here at the Missing Persons Bureau. It was a foggy afternoon in November of 1955. I just returned to the office from a luncheon engagement and was browsing through a report which Studdy had left on my desk earlier when Pauline rang through to say that there was a Mr. Lindsay Caping waiting to see me.
Mr. Caping, Mr. Simon.
Oh, thank you, Pauline.
I hope I hadn't caught you at a bad time, Mr. Simon. I was phoned for an appointment, but to be perfectly frank, I'm here more on impulse than by design.
As it happens, you've caught me at a very good time. Please sit down.
Thank you.
We haven't met before, have we? Your face somehow seems vaguely familiar.
You have seen me on television. I used to compare quite a few shows.
Oh, yes, of course. Not that I'm what you'd call an ardent viewer, but I do watch the occasional program, just to keep myself abreast of current fancy, you know, so to speak.
Well, unfortunately, I don't come under the current category. It's almost 12 months since I last faced the cameras.
Oh?
I fell out of favor with the powers that be, and my career came to a rather an abrupt end. But that's past history, water under the bridge. I'm here because of my wife, Mr. Simon. She left me 2.5 years ago, and I've had no word of her since.
2.5 years?
Back in June, 1953.
You're not divorced?
No. We're just as much married as we ever were, except that we've completely lost touch.
I see. And the circumstances of her departure?
We had an argument. She walked out. It was as simple as that.
An argument? About what?
Oh, nothing in particular. Everything in general. We hadn't been hitting it off for some time.
Hmm. Now you want her back, is that it?
I'd like to talk things over with her, at least.
You've had no communication at all with her during her absence?
None whatever.
How long have you been married?
Going on 10 years.
Have you any children?
No.
She had no specific reason for leaving you.
I didn't say that. As a matter of fact, she had a very specific cause.
Which was?
My success, Mr. Simon. I was stupid enough to let it turn my head.
I'm afraid I don't quite follow.
When I married Helen, I was a struggling actor, just out of the army. There were hundreds of others like me, and jobs were pretty few and far between. In 3 years, I didn't earn enough to pay our rent. Helen had to go to work to keep us from starving. We were really up against it. Then, out of the blue, I was chosen to compere a TV variety show. It was a big hit, and almost overnight I became a celebrity. Work poured in more than I could handle. At one time, I was comparing 3 shows a week. I couldn't take it, Mr. Simon. It made me a different person. I don't know why, but it did. I started drinking heavily, playing about with women, generally making myself objectionable to everyone about me. Most of all to Helen. She took it for a while, for several years, in fact, hoping against hope I'd snap out of it. But instead of improving, I got worse. So finally she reached the end of her rope. There was no real showdown or anything like that. She just went, leaving me to stew in my own juice. After that, I went to pieces completely. Within a year, I was out of work again.
Are you working now?
I still do a little acting from time to time. Nothing with any consequence. However, you needn't worry about money. Thanks to Helen, I have quite a bit invested. I also own a block of flats and a half interest in a pub.
Have you made any sort of attempt to trace her yourself?
I've checked with all her friends and so on, but none of them have seen her.
What about her relatives?
Her parents are both dead.
Brothers, sisters?
She was an only child.
How was she placed for money when she left you?
She might have had a little salted away, but it couldn't have been much, not enough to keep her for any length of time.
You mentioned something just now about her working in the early years of your marriage. Now, what kind of job did she have?
Secretarial.
By whom was she employed?
To tell you the truth, I'm not sure. It's so long ago.
Perhaps one of her friends would know?
Possibly. Let me think now. Amy Scott might be your best bet. She and Helen were pretty close in those days.
Amy Scott?
Yes, she's a dressmaker. Has a small frock shop in Finchley. You'll find her number in the phone book, unless you'd rather I contact her.
No, I think you can safely leave it to us. What age is your wife, by the way?
She'd be 34. Her birthday's in February.
Have you a photograph of her?
I have 3. They're all good snaps. This one was taken a few months before she went.
Huh?
The two of us. It appeared in a women's magazine together with an article entitled How to Cope with Success.
The old story, huh, Chief? Little guy makes good and promptly goes off the deep end.
It's an odd thing, you know, Study. Seems to happen to the very best of them. I've no doubt that before he hit the jackpot, friend Caping was just as nice a fellow as you'd expect to meet. Then Lady Success takes a hand and transforms him into an entirely different person.
Yeah, she's a tough doll to throw.
He owed his wife everything and he candidly admits it. And yet when the time for repayment comes, he turns his back on her. Even derived pleasure from doing so. Incredible, isn't it, when you come to think about it?
Just goes to support the theory that we all have 2 sides to our nature. You see, we're a race of Jekyll and Hydes, and when the good side takes a back seat, the bad side takes over, and, well, vice versa. Oh, but reverting to the problem in hand, who's this woman I've got to see?
Amy Scott. She's a dressmaker. Apparently, she has a shop in Finchley. I've got the address here somewhere. Oh, yes, here it is. 22 Abbott Road. At 22 Abbott Road, off the main Finchley shopping centre, Study introduced himself to Amy Scott, who was a plumpish, fair-haired woman with a quick smile and a pleasant manner. She was alone in the shop, arranging a bowl of flowers.
I'm a firm believer in floral decorations, Mr. Study. They give the place character, don't you agree?
Oh, yes, yes, that I do, ma'am. Kind of expensive, though, this time of year. Unless you cultivate them yourself.
I got these from the grocer across the street. He has the most beautiful garden at the back. But you didn't come here to talk about flowers, did you?
Oh, hardly, no. As I explained, we've been retained to trace Helen Caping by her husband. He mentioned you were a good friend of hers, and we thought maybe you
knew her. I'm sorry, Mr. Study, but I told him I hadn't seen her. I wouldn't have any idea where she might be.
Oh, she hasn't been in touch with you at all.
Not for years.
I understand when she was first married, she had a job?
That's so, yes.
Well, you don't happen to recall who her employers were, I suppose.
Oh, wait a bit. I should do. It was an electrical manufacturing company. I know that because she used to get things for me wholesale. She was secretary to the manager there.
Uh-huh.
They had offices in the city in, Lombard Street. I used to meet her outside the building. What was the name again? Something in Hanson.
Hanson?
Robots in Hanson, that was it. On the left-hand side going up from the stock exchange. About halfway along. I can't remember what her boss's name was, though.
Well, it'll be easy enough to find out. Main thing is, we know where to look for him.
You think she might have gone back to her old job?
Never can tell.
What could have possessed her, I wonder?
Ma'am?
To leave Lindsay. He was her whole world. She worshipped the ground he walked on.
Yeah. Trouble was, he got to doing the same.
Forty minutes later, Studdy presented himself at the city offices of Robards and Hanson, where he duly sought out the manager, one Thomas Kirk, a balding, bespectacled man with a red mole on his forehead.
That's correct, Mr. Studdy. Helen was employed here for over 3 years. Excellent worker. Most efficient secretary I ever had.
Uh-huh. She didn't come back to you by any chance.
Well, yes, it happened she did. About 18 months, 2 years ago. I'd have taken her on like a shot, but unfortunately, company policy no longer allows us to employ married women.
She was after her old job, huh?
Not necessarily her old job, but she was certainly seeking a position.
So, what did you do?
There's nothing much I could do. As I said, being a married woman, she wasn't eligible to be admitted to the staff.
Well, she was married when she worked here before.
Well, that was prior to our revision of policy. However, I did supply her with 2 first-rate references. One from our governing director and one from myself.
Do you know if she had occasion to use them?
That I couldn't tell you. I've not heard from her since. But I imagine she would have done if the opportunity availed itself.
Hmm.
I must say, though, I was somewhat taken aback when she told me she was looking for employment again. At the time, her husband was doing so well for himself on the television.
She'd left him.
So she said. But surely the onus was on him to provide for her. Hey, it all, the fellow must have been making a fortune.
Well, he certainly wasn't scratching.
What happened to him, by the way? Seems to have dropped out of circulation altogether. Haven't seen him do a show for months. Did he have an accident or something?
Yeah. He was driving his ego at top speed. Had a head-on collision with success.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
There was little more that Kirk could tell the agent, except that during her term of employment with Robards and Hanson, Helen Caping had been particularly friendly with a certain Elsie Stromberg, who was still with the firm. Accordingly, Studdy questioned Miss Stromberg, a tall, middle-aged woman with dark hair faintly graying, who occupied the position of secretary to the sales manager.
Before committing myself, Mr. Studdy, I'd rather like to know what this is all about. Is Helen in some form of trouble?
Well, not that I know of.
Well, then, why all the questions?
She's left home. Her husband wants her traced.
She left home ages ago.
2.5 years, to be exact.
And it's taken him all this time to try and find her?
Well, he's been trying to find her off his own bat without much success. Now he's retained us. But how did you know she'd left home? Who told you?
She told me herself.
When?
When she was in to see Mr. Hanson about a job. We had quite a long chat.
About what?
Oh, various things.
Such as?
Such as her leaving Lindsay. Frankly, I don't know how she put up with him for so long.
You know Caping?
I went to visit once. He didn't show up to dinner, and when he finally did appear, about 5 hours late, he was drunk. I had to help Helen pour him into bed. The only other time I struck him, he was so objectionable I went close to slapping his face. That was at a cocktail party. In all my life, I've never met a ruder man, or a more conceited one. He seemed to take a delight in embarrassing people, particularly Helen.
This was after he became such a big name, huh?
Yes. I could never understand how she came to marry him in the first place.
Well, from what I hear, he wasn't always like that. Success changed him.
That's what Helen used to say. Poor kid. Oh, he really put her through the hoops.
Have you seen her since she was in here?
No.
Or heard from her?
Not a word.
You have no idea where she might have gone, where she might be now?
If I did have, can you give me a single reason why I should tell you?
Yes, I can give you a very good reason. She's still a married woman. While things remain as they are, she has about as much chance of finding happiness as you have of flying to Mars on a broomstick. One way or the other, she's got to settle this business, and now's the time to do it, whether she goes back to caping or not.
She'll go back to him. He only has to wave his little finger. She'll be back.
He's been waving it pretty hard for 12 solid months now, and hasn't done any much good. Now, come on, Miss Stromberg. If you know where she is, you'll be doing her a big favor by telling me.
I didn't say I knew where she was.
You intimated it.
All I know is she was looking for work.
Yeah?
I told her to try George Felton.
George Felton?
One of the directors of Goodwood Electrics. I heard he was looking for a good secretary, and it occurred to me that she might fill the bill.
Yeah?
Well, that's all.
Well, did she get the job?
Apparently not. I rang there a week or so later and spoke to the woman who did. She knew nothing about Helen.
So you don't even know if she applied for it?
Not for sure, no. Although she said she was going to.
You didn't check with Felton himself?
Well, at that stage, I didn't see there was much point. Whether she applied or not, she obviously didn't get it.
And you haven't heard from her since, huh?
No.
She didn't happen to mention where she was staying, I suppose.
Oh, if she had, I'd have been in touch with her.
Yeah. Goodwood Electrics.
Their offices aren't far from here, up in Bishopsgate, 21A.
At the Bishopsgate offices of Goodwood Electrics, Study interviewed George Felton, a youngish, keen-eyed man with closely cropped sandy hair and a prematurely furrowed brow.
You're rather taxing my memory, Mr. Study.
Well, maybe this photograph will jog it some, huh?
Oh, yes, yes, I recall her now. But I'd no idea she was the wife of Lindsay Caping. I'm quite sure she didn't mention it.
Well, under the circumstances, that's understandable. You weren't able to use her, huh?
If I'm not mistaken, I'd engaged someone else the previous day. Work was fairly tight for women at that time, especially for those over 30. Any jobs going were snapped up.
You had no other suitable vacancies?
No. I was able to suggest a couple of possibilities to her, though. I'm just trying to think who they were. Hal Sainsbury was one. The secretary he had was getting married or had to move away from London for health reasons, something of the kind. In any case, he was on the lookout for a replacement.
Hal Sainsbury?
Of Westmore and Egan.
Yeah.
There was someone else, too. Jack Cleary, was it? Yes, I've a feeling it might have been. He'd be worth checking with, it, at all events. He's with United Appliances out in Croydon.
United Appliances, Croydon, right?
Yes, it was Cleary. I remember now. I rang him and he told me to send her over.
Uh-huh.
I think they were the only ones.
Well, I'll look them up. Much obliged to you, sir. You've been a big help. Well, that's the position, Mr. Sainsbury. Can you place her at all?
No, I'm afraid I can't. There were several applicants for the job, but as I recall, they're mostly younger women.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I can't be more helpful.
Oh, that's okay, sir. Thanks anyway.
Proceeding to Croydon, Study took a cab from the station to the plant of United Appliances in Cumberland Street, where he was subsequently ushered into the office of John J. Cleary, the general manager.
Helen Caping, I know that name.
I have a photograph of her here.
But of course, she's with Richardson up in Birmingham.
Birmingham?
Have a small branch there. It's only been in existence a few years. Mrs. Caping happened to come along just at the time they were looking for staff. There was nothing for her here, so I referred her to Richardson, our chief representative.
She was most impressed with the qualifications. He put her on right away.
Oh, and she's still there?
I've received no advice to the contrary, so I assume so. Although, now I come to think of it, she did leave us for a spell. Not sure why, but she's back again now.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll just make a note of that address.
Oh, yes. 76 Flinders Street, Birmingham South.
Within an hour, Studdy boarded a train for Birmingham, arriving in that city shortly before 3 o'clock that same afternoon. 76 Flinders Street proved to be a narrow three-story building with offices on the ground and third floors and a restaurant on the second. On inquiring, the agent was directed to room number 14 on the third, where he was received by a broad-shouldered man in a grey suit with rimless glasses and a spotted bow tie.
Oh, Mr. Richardson?
Aye.
How do you do? My name is Studdy. I'm from the Missing Persons Bureau.
Missing persons?
Yes, I understand you have a Mrs. Helen Caping on the staff here.
Aye, that's right. What about her?
Well, I'd like to speak with her, if I may.
Oh, I'm afraid she's not in today. She only works 3 days of the week.
Huh?
The youngster takes up the rest of her time.
Youngster?
Andrea.
Well, I'm afraid I don't quite follow. Andrea who?
Andrea Caping. Didn't you know she has a daughter, 18 months old?
The agent stared at his informant in blank amazement. Helen Caping, the mother of an 18-month-old daughter? Obviously the fellow was joking. Or was he?
Daughter?
That's right, born here in Birmingham, early last year.
But is this on the level?
I'd hardly be making it up, would I?
Pete's sake, well, why wasn't her husband notified?
Well, I gather she didn't want him to know.
But why?
Oh, you'll have to ask her that.
It doesn't add up. How the heck she managed to give birth to a baby and still hold down a job?
She left us for over 6 months, then came back. By then, the kiddie was old enough to be put in a nursery a couple of days each week. She seems to be managing quite well.
Well, I'll be... Look, where is she living? Where can I contact her?
She has a flat in Penshurst. It's just a bus ride from here. 24 Monash Road.
Somewhat dazed, Studdy took his leave of Richardson and set off for the nearby suburb of Penshurst. 24 Monash Road proved to be a block of 6 flats backing onto a small park, where a group of children were flying kites. Consulting the indicator inside the front entrance, the agent made his way upstairs to flat number 3 on the first floor.
Oh, Mr. Studdy, is it?
Well,
I'm Helen Caping. Please come in. I've been expecting you.
Explaining that Richardson had rung from the office to announce his pending arrival, Mrs. Caping calmly ushered Studdy into a tiny, sparsely furnished sitting room. A gas fire was burning in one corner.
In case you're wondering, Mr. Studdy, the baby's asleep in the next room.
Well, I don't get it, ma'am. This whole thing's beyond me. Would you mind enlightening me a little?
What about?
About everything. Did you know you were going to have a baby when you left home?
Of course. That was my main reason for leaving. I couldn't stand the thought of bringing a child up under the same roof as Lindsay.
But why didn't you tell him?
Because I wanted the break to be a clean one. I didn't want him pestering me.
Don't you think he had a right to be told?
He forfeited that a long time ago. When I knew for sure I was pregnant, I made up my mind then and there to get away. I needed money, so I took a job for as long as I could. Then, as soon as I was able, after the baby was born, I went back to work again. Mr. Richardson offered me employment on a part-time basis, which suited me down to the ground.
But even if you hadn't returned to your husband, you could have gotten money from him.
Fortunately, I was never that desperate. I've been very lucky, considering.
He wants to talk things over, ma'am. Would you consent to seeing him again?
It doesn't seem I have much option. You've traced me here. All you have to do is tell him where I am.
I think you'll find he's changed quite a lot.
He changed once before.
For the better this time.
I won't argue, Mr. Studdy. It's in your hands. As far as I'm concerned, you can do as you please.
Henry Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
In response to her husband's appeal, Helen Caping did at length return home to him, together with their daughter, but not before he convinced her that he had permanently recaptured his stability. He has a great deal to make up for in the years that lie ahead, but whether or not he is capable of so doing, only the future can decide. And now, as always, this is Henry Simon, inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.